Nathan giving voice to probably how you all feel. Dennis was probably glad we didn't do a lesson on Auld Lang Syne this morning. So it is good to see all of you all here this morning and those on Facebook. I don't think there's anyone on earth, no other church family in the world that I would have rather done these last 2 years with. I don't want to keep doing it for forever, but I do want to thank you all for loving the way that you all love and for being who you guys are and for having the faith that you have. The theme for 2021 was the next step by faith, and I don't know how those steps were going to go. Certainly didn't think they would keep going as they were for so long, but that's how it is. But I don't know about your individual discipleship. I hope that throughout 2021 you were able to take some next steps. We had several this past year that chose to put Jesus on in baptism, that chose to take those first steps in discipleship, and we rejoice with our new brethren and that have decided to take that next step. And I hope that each one of us maybe found ways to pray more, to study more, to give more, to encourage more, to be more aware of those that need our attention and the people that need our love and our mercy. I hope that we've taken some of those next steps individually. And of course, I know congregationally it's been tough these last couple of years to take next steps together, but I believe we've studied more books of the Bible together and passages of the Bible that we've studied and encouraged each other to take that next step. We've had some very difficult and challenging conversations talking together about different issues and topics, taking those next steps. We've taken our next steps as far as our generosity goes. We have kept our congregational support at full strength and added even more when a need would arise. We've taken so many next steps together, but it's been a hard year, right? It's been a hard year physically. It's been a hard year emotionally. It's been a hard year spiritually. I think that it's okay to admit that, to acknowledge that it's been hard, and that's why I think that the theme for 2022 is going to be Fix Your Eyes on Jesus, because that's going to be my encouragement for us this next year, is to fix our eyes on Jesus. I think some of the important words that we're going to have to remember this year are words like endurance and perseverance and patience. Wait for the Lord. Remember who you are. Remember whose you are, because there's going to be countless influences in your life. Not just when you were a kid, but as you go on, every single one of us, there are going to be countless influences that attempt to derail us and distract us. And of course, if we listen to them, well, we will forget who we are and what we are supposed to be about and what we are supposed to be doing. So this year, as in every year, we need to fix our eyes on Jesus. Don't let anything, don't let anyone derail you or us from being who we are supposed to be and doing what we are supposed to do. I don't have any idea what 2022 has in store for us, right? It's going to be an adventure. We're going into something that we don't know. And if there's anything, though, that the last 2 years have taught us is that we don't know anything what the future holds. You may think you do. You may have all kinds of plans, but your plans are good. But you better say, Lord willing, because you don't know, right? None of us do. We don't know what the year will hold in store for us. I know there will be challenges. I know there will be struggles. I know there will be influences that if we are not careful, they will derail us. And so we have to fix our eyes on Jesus. I don't think sometimes we acknowledge the power of social pressure. And I know when I say peer pressure, we all think of one group of people, right? We just think of teenagers. We always warn teenagers about peer pressure. Well, somebody probably should warn the adults about peer pressure. But peer pressure is just as much a problem with adults as it is with children. Social pressure has incredible influence on us. We have no idea how influenced we are by social pressure, by other people doing it, and then eventually we start doing it too. I think as an example about texting, when texting first started, you had to push the number 3 times to get some certain letters, and it was annoying and it took forever. And then someone would text a question, and I'd call them, and I'd be like, just call me. I can't text you an answer to that. Texting seemed like the strangest thing in the world. But it didn't take long to realize that if I'm going to be part of this society, if I'm going to have a relationship with those people, I was going to have to learn to text. I had to decide which was more important, which was more valuable, doing the things the way that I wanted to do them, or learn how to do things to be part of the group. And I decided I wanted to be part of the group rather than to hold on to the way I used to do things. Now I do things just the opposite. I may say, why don't you just text me instead of call me? but chances are everybody in this room or watching online has fell victim to that pressure too. You thought it was strange at first, but after a while, you had to decide, am I going to do what everybody else is doing, or am I going to keep doing things the way that I've always done them? And you had to make a choice. We all, at one time or another, have given in to the pressure because we all want to belong to a group. We all want to be part of what's going on. And you might think, well, I don't do that. I don't give in to social pressure. But what kind of house do you live in? What kind of car do you drive? What kind of clothes do you wear? Chances are, it's pretty similar to what everybody else drives, what everybody else wears. But why? Well, it's because we are social creatures, and we want to be part of a group. We want to be involved in what everybody else is involved in, and we are afraid of being rejected. If you wore what nobody else wore, no one would talk to you. If you drove that kind of car, people would think you were strange. If you lived in that kind of house, people would say that's weird, and we fear that rejection. The younger we are, the more groups we try out. Maybe I will fit into this group or this group. Maybe if I dress like this, these people will accept me. And the older we get, the more established we are in different social groups. And we've kind of decided this is the way that I am, and this is how I'm going to dress, and this is how I'm going to talk, and this is how I'm going to do things. And we have those groups of people that accept us, which makes it even more risky to do something that might risk those relationships. But I want to ask you this question this morning, and I want you to just think about it for a second. And here's the question. Over what would you be willing to risk total social rejection? And just sit with that question for a minute. Because none of us want to do that. None of us want to wear something that other people think is weird or drive something that other people think is strange. People don't do things that they know, if I do this, I'm not going to fit in. If I do this, I'm not going to be accepted. If I do this, people are going to reject me. So what would you be willing to be rejected over? Over what would you risk total social rejection? Because if you're going to be followers of Jesus, we have to realize that this is the message that Jesus preached to potential disciples. He told them, if you're going to follow me, you have to realize that it might mean total social rejection. He told them, if you follow me, you might have to count the cost, or you need to count the cost before you become a disciple. Before you become a disciple, you have to stop and ask yourself, would I rather have Jesus than my children? Would I rather have Jesus than my spouse, than my parents? Would I rather have Jesus than my friends? Would I rather have Jesus than whatever? This is what Jesus meant, and it was a very real statement then when he said, take up your cross and follow me, because you might really be rejected by everybody in your life. Luke 14:26, Jesus says, if anyone comes to me and does not hate his own father and mother and wife and children and brothers and sisters, yes, even his own life, he cannot be my disciple. And this is exactly what those early disciples experienced. That they experienced being publicly exposed to reproach and affliction. People thought those followers of Jesus were weird, and we don't like them, and so they lost relationships with all kinds of people, both those in authority and those in authority of their own personal lives. In fact, one phrase that the Hebrew writer uses so often that's been stuck in my mind is that they joyfully accepted the plundering of their property. Just sit with that idea for a second. They joyfully accepted the plundering of their property. People came in and took their stuff, and they considered it a joy. They counted it that they were worthy to suffer in the name of Jesus. This is what it meant then to be a disciple. This is what it meant to be a follower of Jesus, to say, I'm with him no matter what it costs me. No matter who thinks that I'm strange, no matter who thinks that I'm weak, no matter who thinks that I'm foolish, no matter who thinks that I'm a failure, no matter who thinks that I'm throwing my life away, I'm with Jesus, and I'm going to do things his way, and I would rather have Jesus than I would rather have anything else. This is what the early Christians experienced, and I'm sure at first that there was this spiritual burst of excitement and joy, and they were suffering, yes, but they were suffering these things together. But then some people started saying, yeah, but I don't know. I was pretty comfortable before. I was pretty good before all of this Jesus stuff started. I could get along with everybody. Nobody thought that I was weird or strange or foolish. Everybody knew that I was part of them. And then this whole Jesus thing started, and I don't know, it's getting pretty hard. And then some people started jumping ship. And they started saying, you know what, I'm going back and I'm hanging out with my old crowd. I'm done with this whole Jesus thing. They started to forsake the assembling together of themselves. That they started to abandoning the way of Jesus, and they said, I'm finished. And so the Hebrews writer writes this letter. It's more like he preaches this sermon to say, don't give up. But because whatever you're giving Jesus up for is not worth it. Whatever you are abandoning Jesus for isn't worth it, because Jesus is better. Fix your eyes on Jesus. And he gives all these examples from the Hebrew scriptures, from the Old Testament, the chapter 11 of Hebrews. He talks about Noah and Abraham and Jacob and Isaac and Moses. And he says, look at how they lived their lives. And they were willing to lay aside everything else to do things God's way. That's what faith is all about. Be like them. And so we'll look here at chapter 12, verse 1 that was read earlier. To encourage those who might be tempted to waver. Therefore, since we are surrounded by so great a cloud of witnesses, let us lay aside every weight and sin which clings so closely, and let us run with endurance the race that is set before us. It can feel incredibly lonely following Jesus, for our community, for our world to think those people are weak, those people are foolish, those people are throwing their lives away. It can be incredibly lonely. And that's exactly why the Hebrew writer is saying what he's saying here. So let's just walk through that for a second. He says, we are surrounded. You feel lonely. You feel like every time I look around, somebody else is jumping ship. Every time I look around, somebody else is going away. Every time I turn around, somebody is giving up Christianity, and I'm kind of considering it too. Is it worth it to follow Jesus? And the Hebrew writer says, you're not alone. You are not by yourself in your faithfulness. You are surrounded. And I love the word cloud. Like a ton of people, like a whole crowd, like a dust storm. It's just a bunch of individual particles. But together, it's this huge cloud. He says, that's how many people you are surrounded by. You are surrounded by a cloud of witnesses. When we read witness, we think of someone who has seen something, but think here more of someone who testifies to something. In fact, here the word in Greek is where we get our word martyr from. Someone who testifies to something. We are surrounded by a cloud of witnesses, not just that are witnessing us, but that they are witnessing their life. They are testifying to the faithfulness of God. Abraham and Isaac and Jacob and Noah and Moses, these men and women of faith testified to the faithfulness of God. Many of them laid down their life and became, as we use that word, martyrs, because they said, I'm with God no matter what it costs me. No matter what it takes, no matter what I have to give up or sacrifice, I'm with him, and I'm going to do things his way. And so the Hebrew writer writes to those who might not endure, whose faith might start to waver, that you are not alone. You are surrounded. I know you can't see it, that you have this people all around you. And I think that has particular relevance for us, doesn't it? We too are surrounded. And I know it doesn't feel like it used to in here, but we are surrounded. We are not by ourselves. You are not alone. You are surrounded by a cloud of witnesses, both living witnesses and witnesses that have gone on before us. You are surrounded by a cloud of people who testify to the faithfulness of God. You are surrounded by a cloud of people that are willing to do things God's way, no matter what they say or think about us, no matter what they do to us, no matter what it costs. We're going to do things God's way, and you are surrounded by a cloud of witnesses. And then he says, in order to run this race, you have to lay aside every weight. Get rid of it. Whatever it is that's distracting you or holding you back, that's keeping you from running the way you're supposed to run. When you're running in a race, that's all that can matter at that time, right? You can't be like, I really want to run this race, but I also really want to carry this TV. You can't do both, right? You have to pick one or the other. You can either carry the TV or you can run the race, but you can't do both. And he doesn't say here, we'll get to it in a second, lay aside every sin. That's coming. He says, lay aside every weight. And many of us are carrying around a weight that's not necessarily a sin. And that's what we say. This isn't necessarily a sin, but is it weighing you down? Is it distracting you? Is it derailing you? This is why we read over and over and over throughout Scripture things like, if you desire to be rich, you will plunge yourself into ruin. Jesus would say that you can't serve two masters. You either love the one and hate the other, but you cannot serve both God and money, period. You can't carry the TV and run the race. Sometimes you have to decide, is this holding me back? Is this distracting me? Am I so addicted to comfort or security or acceptance or applause or whatever it is that's holding me back? Am I so enamored by it and so addicted to it that it's keeping me from doing what I'm supposed to be doing and who I'm supposed to be? So the Hebrew writer gives all these examples of people that said, you know what, it's not worth it. Moses was living in royalty in the Egyptian palace, and he said, no, I'd rather be a slave. I'd rather be with the Hebrew people. I'm going to give up my palace living to live with them. Abraham, God told him to go to a land that I'm going to show you, and Abraham said, okay, I'm off. Whatever it is, I'm leaving behind whatever, all that I have, to go to where God has called me to go. But many of us are carrying around so much stuff, both in a very literal sense and in a metaphorical sense. Whatever is holding you down, distracting you, derailing you, you've got to lay it aside and say, Jesus is more. Jesus is better. Jesus is worth it. And it's not just every weight, but every sin as well. We have to be a people of self-denial. That's what we read all through Scripture, that we can't indulge in every appetite and be followers of Jesus. We have to decide whose will we do, ours or his. Every weight and every sin, lay it aside. Then he says to run with endurance. And that's going to be a key word this year. It has been, I guess, for the last couple of years, whether we knew it or not. Endurance. Endure. Nobody said, at least Scripture or Jesus didn't say, that Christianity was going to be comfortable or easy. And I hear that get preached all the time, but that's not what Scripture says. Nobody promised us this journey of discipleship was going to be easy or comfortable or safe. It's going to be hard and difficult and challenging. What we are promised is, though, is that it's worth it. and that you are not alone, that you are surrounded by a cloud of witnesses. So run this race with endurance. And I like how he says that this race is set before us, like a track. The competition is laid before us, not a competition as competing against each other, but a competition as the challenge that lies ahead. There's a course that's laid out ahead, and we are the people that have to run it, but there are ones that have ran it before. We aren't the first ones. You're not the first ones to struggle with this. You're not the first ones to be challenged by this. We're not the first ones to ask questions. We have a cloud of witnesses that are running this race with you, and this race is full of challenges and pitfalls. It's full of things that are going to make you question, things that are challenging. There's even suffering that lies ahead. And he says, run the race with endurance. Lay aside every weight and sin that so closely clings to us. Laying aside, then he says in verse 2, looking to Jesus, the founder and perfecter of our faith, who for the joy that was set before him endured the cross, despising the shame, and is seated at the right hand on the throne of God. And that's a lot of good stuff there. Fixing your eyes or looking to Jesus, the founder. And some translations say the pioneer, the one who went first. Isn't it always easier to do something when somebody else has already gone first? We say ladies first, right? Well, maybe we should be the ones that go first, because oftentimes it's the one who goes first that it's the hardest for, or they have the hardest job. We go first and then people come behind us that have an easier time. That's good news. None of us have to go first. None of us have to go first with the suffering or the hardship or the pain or the struggle or the challenge. Jesus went first. He's the founder, the pioneer, the one who goes first. He's the one who shows us how it's done. If you want to talk about suffering or talk about hardship or sacrifice or giving stuff up, Jesus did all of that. The founder and pioneer of our faith. Not only the founder, but the perfecter, the one who starts it and who finishes it. He says you can look to Abraham, you can look to Isaac or Jacob or Noah, you can look at all of these faith-filled people, but Jesus is the perfecter of faith. He's the finisher. He's the one who brings it to completion. Not only does he go before us, but he finishes it up. He shows us exactly what faith looks like, to lay aside everything else and to say, my food is to do my Father's will, and I want to eat that and breathe that and sleep that. I want to do what pleases my Father. Jesus shows us how it's done. He's the founder, the perfecter of our faith, and the joy that was set before him, he endured the cross. It doesn't mean he enjoyed going to the cross. It means that he knew there was joy on the other side of the cross. And for that joy, he endured the cross. Not just so you could be saved. Yes, so you could be saved, but also as your example, your pioneer, your perfecter. He's showing you, this is what it looks like to follow me. There's joy on the other side of the suffering. And for the joy that was set before him, he endured the cross. Sometimes when suffering hardships or challenges or shame that comes down upon us, people don't like us. And people think we're weird and weak. We think something is broken. Something is wrong. Things aren't supposed to be this way. And I think Jesus says it was for me, and it will be for you as well. This is what it looks like to follow me, and for the joy set before you, endure your cross. For the joy set before you, endure your suffering, endure your shame. It says he despised the shame. That's an interesting phrase. As opposed to what? Caving to the shame. And we do that all the time, right? Caving to shame. We say, I'd really like to do that, but I'd be embarrassed to do that. And because I'd be embarrassed to do that, I'm going to keep doing things the way that people want me to, and so I won't get embarrassed. We do those sorts of things all the time. We cave to shame. But Jesus didn't cave to shame. He despised the shame. You think what you want about me. You say what you want to say about me. You can think I'm weak or foolish or wrong. You can even nail me to a cross. But I'm going to do my Father's will. He despised the shame. And the Hebrews writer is calling his audience to do the same. Don't cave to the shame. People are going to think you're weak. People are going to think you're foolish. People are going to think you're failures. Endure. Because of the joy set before you, endure the shame and the suffering and the persecution. And he says that then Jesus sat down at the right hand of the throne. Honor, glorification. It's not all bad, it's good. That there's way more good than there is bad. That's the Hebrew writer's whole point here. The Hebrews writer's whole point is, yes, it's going to be tough for a while. Yes, you're going to suffer. Yeah, people will think you're strange. You're going to lose relationships. Things are going to hurt. You're going to feel shame and burden and rejection and turmoil. But it's all worth it. Because on the other side is joy and honor and glorification. What Jesus endured, you may have to endure. But what Jesus was given, you will be given as well. That's good news, isn't it? So as we think about this idea or peer pressure, I want us to have this thought as we begin to close. The key to resisting peer pressure is not think for yourself. Or is not don't follow the crowd. Because no matter what, you're always going to follow a crowd, right? The key is to follow the right crowd. The key to resisting peer pressure or negative peer pressure isn't for you to think for yourself or to not go along with the crowd. The key is to think like Jesus and to be part of his crowd. That's what the Hebrew writer is saying. That you are surrounded by a cloud of witnesses. Jesus being the pioneer and the founder, the one who starts and the one who finishes it and perfects it all, and all of these others. You, too, are part of that crowd. Think like Jesus and be part of that crowd. So here's where we end at this morning, that following Jesus means always being in good company. It might feel lonely sometimes, and it might feel hard sometimes, and there might be people that say, I don't understand you, that's so foolish, but no, you're in good company, because they treated Jesus that way. They treated the prophets that way. They treated the apostles that way. You're in good company, because this is exactly what faith looks like. Faith looks like doing the right thing, the good thing, the loving thing, even when it costs you everything. This is what it looks like to be a follower of Jesus. And when you're a follower of Jesus, you are in good company. You're always surrounded by a cloud of witnesses, whether you can see them or not. And that's what I want this year. I want to be part of that cloud of witnesses to encourage one another, to spur one another on, to love one another, to point each other on to good works, and to point each other towards Jesus, to say, fix your eyes on Jesus, to remind ourselves that we are part of something bigger than ourselves. Remind ourselves that we are part of something that Jesus is the author and the perfecter of. To remind ourselves that we are his and what we are supposed to be doing, and not be distracted or weighed down or derailed, but to keep our eyes fixed on Jesus. Remind each other that you're always in good company when you follow him. And so if there's anyone here this morning that is ready to begin following him or he needs prayers or encouragement, we would love for you to come now or to grab myself or one of the leadership after services. But come now as together we stand and sing.